Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 96-year-old Herbert Ford of Exeter, California. Originally from the Harlingen, Texas area along the border, he served in both the Merchant Marine and the U.S. Army Air Corps. When we left off, he was telling us about being aboard his ship, the SS Fort George, in Tokyo Bay while General MacArthur and Admiral Nimitz and others were signing the instruments of surrender aboard the battleship USS Missouri. I guess I should ask you, too, if you're there in Tokyo Bay September 2nd, maybe what happened a few weeks before that was significant too. Do you remember getting that news aboard ship that Japan had surrendered?
Yes, we had received that news, and it was joyful. I thought that we might be diverted from going up, but we weren't. We were assigned to go ahead into Tokyo.
And you told us that back in the States, you got the draft notice and you decided to join the Army Air Corps. Were you hoping to become a pilot?
No, I knew I would not become a pilot. I was born with strabismus, which is crossed eyes and never fully corrected. And the surgery that was done on it reduced the vision in the left eye to the point where I knew that I wouldn't qualify as a pilot. But I just liked the idea of the Air Corps rather than the Army. That was my reason.
And it doesn't seem like that strabismus has really stopped you from doing much.
Well, it hasn't, and people have been very generous about my goggly eyes. But I like to do what I like to do, and I give it all I can when I get to it.
And we're going to hear more about that. So you're in the Army Air Corps, and you told us they shipped you right to the Pentagon, which is a fairly new facility at this time. What did they have you doing there?
Yes, the Pentagon, of course, was opened in 1943, and I was assigned to the Air Adjutant General's office, and I was assigned to take care of the records of air officers that were assigned to the Pentagon building. That included the lowest-ranking officer, air officer, and the highest-ranking air officer, which was the chief of staff of the Air Force. At that time, General Hoyt Vandenberg was the chief of staff. And the Pentagon experience was very interesting. We moved our offices in the Pentagon building about every 4 to 6 months. I say we moved them, the officials moved them, and we would come on a Friday morning and there would be a note on our typewriter that said, on Monday morning, you will report to such and such a place on such and such a ring of the Pentagon building, which is five-sided, as you know. You tie these two pieces of twine to the platen of your typewriter, so the platen won't go back and forth while it being transported somehow. So you report to that new place, and you would come on Monday morning, and you would find everything. You might be on the totally other side of the building, maybe another floor up or down, and everything would be exactly the same as when you left it on Friday at the other place, your original place. And even the waste baskets were placed in exactly the same place. So it was a security matter to make sure that people didn't come to know that you were there in one place permanently. And of course, the Pentagon was an interesting place with so many high-ranking officers. When we first went into the Pentagon building, I was just out of basic training, of course, and I was saluting every officer I would see because I was a lowly private. I'd get a laugh out of most of these fellas as they would throw a real quick salute back at me. And then I reported to the place where I was supposed to begin working, to a colonel. And we saluted him, I saluted him, and he started laughing. And he said, "Have you been saluting everybody here?" We said, "Yes, sir." And there was another guy with me. He said, "Stop that." He said, "We don't salute around here or we'd lose our arms." He said, "There are too many." And but it was a good service. During the latter part of my hitch, I was assigned to take the medals of the service medals that depicted where a person had served in the United States or in foreign areas around to all of the Air Force officers in the Pentagon building. One of these, of course, was General Hoyt Vandenberg's office. Went there, and his aide-de-camp, a major, was there, and I started to give him the medals, and suddenly the general walked out of the office. And we enlisted people in the Pentagon. This was a time when the Air Force was changing their uniform from the Army Air Corps' olive drab color to Air Force blue, with new Air Force blue uniforms. And it was a period of a vacuum, sort of, and we listed guys had started tailoring ourselves a little bit. We had stripes sewn on the back of our shirts. Instead of wearing issued belts, we wore white web belts, wore white socks, and loafer for shoes rather than these. And here the general comes out, and he looks over and he sees me, and he says, "Sergeant," he says, is that the new Air Force uniform you're wearing?" And I thought I was going to be court-martialed, but he laughed about it very much. And those kinds of things happen infrequently, of course, but it did make service in the Pentagon building a joy and to me.
Well, and I'm just imagining if you spent that much time there, there were probably some other officers or personalities of note that you rubbed elbows with.
Well, yes. One I remember very much because for some reason he liked to stop by and just chat for a while. Captain Gentile, his name was. He was a leading air ace in Europe for quite a while. He was credited with destroying 26 German airplanes in dogfights. And Don just seemed to like to talk, and I sure like to listen to him. But there were a number of people that we had good relationships with there.
And did that give you, I'm curious what kind of perspective that proximity to power gave you, to be there in the Pentagon where so many of these big decisions are being made? What kind of perspective did that give you?
Well, that kind of puffed your ego up a little bit, I think, you know. I really, really enjoyed the service so much there because it was, though it was hard in ways, we were stationed in the Pentagon building but housed at Bowling Field, which is down in the south of Washington, D.C. And every morning early, we would eat our breakfast and be bused over to the Pentagon building from the field. Then in the evening, come back, and we would go into the mess hall in the evening, and all of the steaks and other things that were really good stuff, you know, had been used up by the other personnel on the field by that time. And so a hamburger patty and canned peaches and stuff like that was our, and we griped about it, you know, a bit. At one time, near the end of my service, the commander of the field, a brigadier general, called us all together. Those enlisted men who worked in the Pentagon building were housed on the field. And he addressed us, "You Pentagon prima donnas," he said. "You will not talk to your officers that you work for about conditions on this field or about the way you're treated or anything else, and you just straighten up." That was his whole point. 3 weeks later, we were assigned per diem to get places to live off of the field in Washington, D.C. It all came about by one of the fellows in the Pentagon disobeying the general and talking to his general, who happened to be a lieutenant general with 3 stars. And this lieutenant general had things changed for this squadron. It was called the Headquarters and Headquarters Squadron of the United States Air Force. So we were put on per diem. And it became an awful lot like a civilian job almost.
I guess I should ask you too, since you had a front row seat, the transition from the Army Air Corps to the United States Air Force, was that a significant shift in terms of how things operated?
Not at all. There was no change except that we were ordered to report for new uniforms. And we thought the Air Force Blue was pretty terrific stuff.
My nephew, who's a junior at the Air Force Academy, agrees with you. And all that time around the Pentagon and in Washington, did you ever encounter President Truman?
No, I never thought about Truman very much. Only after everything was said and done, after the bombs were dropped and everything, did Truman's place in shaping the world at that time come to my sense, really. I'm a late learner, you know. But no, we had no contact with anything of a political nature in that situation at all. There at Bowling Field, they had a Bowling Field located right on the Potomac River in the south. They had a 3 crash boats that were stationed there in the case any aircraft. There was a naval air station right next to Bowling Field. So you had a lot of aircraft flying in and out. And the air officers assigned to the Pentagon building, who were pilots, had to do proficiency flying out of Bowling Field. So these crash boats were there on the water in the case any plane would go down. And I made friendships with a number of the fellows on the crash boats, and we used to go on Sundays and other off days, holidays more or less, along the Potomac. And along the Potomac River in Washington itself is a sidewalk right beside the river that goes along and the park area back of that. And we used to take our crash boats and start opening them up. And the wake of our crash boat would hit the little wall that was there and go over the top of the wall, and people that were walking along on the sidewalks would be hit with water up to about the knees from this wave. And we would do a quick turn and head back down the river from doing that. But that was part of the craziness of the whole thing.
Well, that is one thing Herb Ford did not reenact on his recent visit to Washington, D.C. with Central Valley Honor Flight. The next flight for that chapter is coming up. You can welcome veterans home in Fresno, California on October 18th. But you don't have to wait that long if you're anywhere near Santa Maria, California. And I know we have a lot of you listening out there on California's Central Coast. October 4th, Wednesday night, around 7:30 p.m., you can welcome home nearly 100 veterans from their Honor Flight to Washington, D.C. That'll be at the Santa Maria Airport Wednesday, October 4th. When we come back, Mr. Ford will explain why exercising his conscience led to one of the biggest blessings of his life. And we'll hear about his connection with World War II's most famous conscientious objector, Desmond Doss. He's the Medal of Honor recipient whose story took on new life in recent years because of the film Hacksaw Ridge, portraying his heroics in the Battle of Okinawa. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 1,800 veterans will have seen their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.